Hello, dear friends, and welcome back to the latest episode of Heartfelt Awkwards. We're here today. It's got to be awkward, or it's not this podcast. It's like a professional podcast, not some random chick and her brother on the porch talking about awkward stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, today, as you could hear, my very intelligent, well-versed brother chiming in with his conversation. My brother is here. Introduce yourself.
Yes. Hello, my name is Nathan Hendricks. I'm 26 years old, military vet, younger brother of Michaela and Allie. Also a huge nerd. So are you Batman fans and Star Wars fans and Transformer fans? And if you're a fan itself, you know, we got something in common there, buddy.
Gosh. Okay. All right. Thank you. So, today, I had mentioned previously him getting on the podcast to talk about, his time in the military. So, let's just dive right into that. I had sent you some previous questions, so let's take a look at those. So why don't you told us a little bit about like your interests and stuff, but why don't you tell us about your childhood?
You want to go the beginning or like when we met?
You could start there because, you know,
you want to do
in the
beginning?
Previous podcast, yeah. I had Allie on here and we talked about
the inside. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Sure. We could talk about that.
So I'm pretty sure you know how. I came into the family. Mm-hmm. I told you.
What was your perspective?
I'm gonna go back in time here.
Tell me.
So, when Allie had, before she had met Sheila in her family, I think that's what she
Katrina?
Told you. Katrina. Sheila Katrina. I don't know the name. Katrina.
Yes.
She actually, I remember not before. I was about maybe 4 or 5. Our biological mother and her biological father in a fight. We're fighting, you know. And I was about four or five, yeah. And I remember her running away. That's the first time she ran away to Uncle Ray's house up the street. That's the last time I saw her. That's when she went to Katrina's house right after.
Oh,
pretty
wow.
Sure. So
I didn't know that.
That was the last time I saw her, you know. Yeah.
That's
it's a
awful.
Lot. Yeah, it's a lot. I had a Batman toy actually, and I slept in the closet that night. And,
trauma.
I was like, Batman, please save me.
We're gonna start
huge,
heavy early, like
huge
I didn't
Batman
bring the
fan.
Tissues out
huge
here.
Batman fan. So Batman saved my life. That's what I'm saying. Not really.
Okay.
Don't cry. It's okay.
All
right. Hey, it makes us no breakfast, right? So that time. My childhood. Wow. So Allie Dunn had left, and I lived with her biological dad for about a couple months. Polly had went to jail after that night, I think, and I lived with Junior and his friend Pete Setterfield. And at the time, I wasn't in no preschool. I think I was too young to start kindergarten. So it's kind of vivid. I remember Junior would work. He'd walk back home to Pete Setterfield's house every time he'd get off work, and then it's all blurry. I remember Polly getting out of prison, and then us living with her sister Aunt Nancy at the time, and then Polly had then left again. And it's really blurry. It's kind of choppy, but I'm trying to remember everything. I was real, real young. Polly had left again. I think after we left Aunt Nancy's house, I was put in adoption. So that was years before I think Allie was in adoption, kind of, you know. So, but I didn't know what she was. I didn't know Allie was at all. I remember, I met my foster family, the Austins. They were a black suburban middle class family, because usually back in that time in social services, 20 years ago, they would put race with race, So that was a thing. I am mixed, but if you see on paper, you see me, I'm a little tan boy. So they put the closest.
And do you, feel like that's how you were categorized growing up? Like with you being.
Me being mixed? Yeah. I didn't see it. I didn't see it because when I started kindergarten, there's another mixed kid in my class. He looked different than I did. So he had like, because most, some mixed kids have straight hair. You know, I had the curly afro. His skin was darker than mine. I was a little bit lighter, a little tanner. So I didn't really know what mixed was until as I got older. Probably like maybe 9, 10, I started to see it. Yeah. But backtrack, I was in a foster family. And by the time I didn't know what Allie was, I knew Junior and Polly were somewhere. David, you know, David was, I guess, in jail or something at the time. So I was all alone. You know, I was new to this.
Yeah.
They put you in this foster care. You know, this was, and this was new, I think, for Alamance County. I think this was over there near the building was over there near the.
We don't have to get specific.
Oh, no, I'm just saying. Oh, yeah, it's in Burlington. But anyway, I remember just in this foster family, and then I started kindergarten at Hillcrest. About five years old. Longer than 20 years ago. And then I remember Allie sent me a letter. I don't know, I still have it. I think I still have it. But she sent me a letter saying that she was where she was. I think she had just met you guys. And
I would love to see that.
I gotta find it. It's in the book at the baby book at the house. Yeah, I think it probably has it. But she wrote me a letter and drew a picture of us two. And then. Fast forward to about a year, so I think I was in first grade, living with the Austins. Polly had just got out of jail, I think, yeah. And she was in a woman's halfway house for women and kids.
Yeah.
It's over there, downtown Burlington. So I know where it's at. It's like it's kind of a full circle. I went there for actually Spectrum, the house beside it, for install, and I was just like, wow. I mean, the basketball court was still there, so rundown playground was still there. But 20 years ago, it was, I was playing in that playground. So,
right.
Probably I got out and went to that halfway woman's house, and she got a job at, I think it was Arby's. At the time, I was in foster care too with the Austins. And then I could live. So she got custody of me. And so I lived with her for about, I want to say, 4 months. And then in those 4 months, I missed some school, but I didn't know. Missed some school, and I remember my caseworker came to the apartment. It was an apartment, kind of, it's like a halfway house, but in the four apartments. And she took me away. I don't know why she took me away. I remember because I was watching Treasure Planet when it first came out. So,
wow, you're old.
Yeah, I actually am old. Good movie though. Good movie. It's a good movie for a young man without fathers, you know. So. Anyway, so I went back to the Austins. I didn't like the Austins. The mom treated me terribly. When I got in trouble, because I think when you're a kid, I didn't know right from wrong. I just knew.
Well, you grew up in a really traumatic.
Yeah, I knew what I knew. Yeah, I knew what I knew. So when I got in trouble, she would make me. It's like kind of Cinderella. She made me scrub the floors with toothbrushes. And I don't think I was fully potty trained either at the time, so I would wet myself, and I'm getting, and she would put the rag underwear on my face, maybe take cold showers and stuff. It's traumatizing. It's bad. Yeah. In fact, my foster brother sisters and the dad was great to me. I think they didn't know what's going on, and I couldn't really speak up because I was scared. I didn't know. This is new to me from moving from house to house, and then I think. So I was with the Austins again, taken away from Polly again, second grade this year. So I was playing baseball. And I think that's when I met you. And actually, yeah, I think I met you and Allie and mom and dad for the first time at the baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was by accident. I don't remember. I can't, only Allie, I think Allie knows, but I think it was an accident or... I didn't know what to say because it was kind of, I haven't seen her since going on probably 3 years.
Yeah.
So I didn't see her for 3 years. And then I met you, and then we went to the mall for the day. And I remember they were wearing a Spider-Man tour or something, but I didn't get it. I started crying and everything. And I think I was leaving too, leaving Allie. So it was really traumatizing. Because yeah. Allie told you she was like my mother for the first, let's say, 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, she was five and then six. So she had to grow up. She was five. And, you know, that's all I, that's probably I pretty much had as a mother figure and father figure because Junior and Polly were, you know, out and about partying or whatever.
You've
so
you've never met your biological
oh,
father?
Oh, no,
right?
I never have. Never have. He was 19 when him and Polly met. Sorry about that. I actually found out about that. They met twice. So they met in, I think, jail. So he was 18 and she was 35. They met 6 months later at Buckner up in Mebane, Buckner Psych Ward. Because they said, you know, Polly was telling me when you're on the street doing drugs to get a cot and 3 meals, you say you're going to hurt yourself in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So you go to the hospital. So, and she said those were co-ed dorms. I don't know why they put, you know, people in co-ed dorms
right.
back on Buckner's. This is 27 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So Yancey was probably 19. They hooked up. That's when the seed latched, and that
oh,
was
wow.
me and my, me and my, I was conceived, and she didn't know, I guess. She didn't know for some time, for months at a time, and then, never knew, and I never, I have a picture of Yancey, but I never met him, so, you know, I think about from time to time, about meeting him, about reaching out, you know, just, because I see on his face, I see that I have an aunt, I have two half brothers, I have a niece, yeah, I have a grandma, yeah, so, that takes some prayer, though. I'd want to be married if by then, hopefully, to reach out on Facebook or something. Hey, not to him, but probably to my aunt. Hey, I'm such and such just happened. But anyway, yeah, sorry, off topic there. But so yeah, I saw you guys and then went to the mall. And I think Allie told you at the time she was saying she had a little brother. You know, in the it's called the system, the adoption system. So I remember getting picked up by I think Dad. I think it was Dad. I think it was Dad. And you know, never had a dad, so I was like, I'll call you Dad now. So you know how Dad is. He starts crying when he talks about it.
Yeah.
So it's a good memory, though. It's a great memory. Yeah.
And so you definitely went through a lot of trauma already, so
Probably
young.
Right. Yeah.
And then you were adopted officially by our family and brought in, and we were all one family. And in the last podcast episode, we discussed, you know, how that kind of went. But then, you know, we're fast forward into your introduction into the military. Now,
yeah.
We had a family member who was in the military,
yes,
and
did.
I know that there was some influence there.
Yeah, there was.
But at what point did you decide officially to start looking into joining the military?
I think it was about freshman year of high school.
Was it one of those recruiters?
No. I think growing up, me and Dad, we would watch, you know, a war movie, you know.
Yeah.
Men of Honor, The Guardian, you know, Troy, Gladiator. So it was kind of instilled that, you know, old school, you know, warfighter masculinity, you know, mindset. But anyway, you know, we had a family member at the time. He was in the military, and he would send me MREs, and he actually made me that smaller military camouflage uniform. And so it was freshman year of high school. I was thinking about it. So I know we couldn't afford, you know, college per se, because we had a big family. But you know, I think I was academically smart, but not to where I got a full scholarship. But I did get a scholarship, half scholarship, to Mars Hill University. But I didn't do nothing with it. You know, my eyes were set on the military. So.
Yeah.
And freshman year, I think I was started to look into it and started to train for it. So
yeah.
That was probably, yeah.
So then how old were you when you went in?
18 years old.
Mm. And what was your reasoning you said because you watched a lot of war movies and...
I honestly felt like, growing up, kind of underneath mom and dad's kind of shadow a little bit. Yeah. You know, you kind of told what to do because of them. So,
yeah.
I know. I think my way out to find who I was as a young man.
Right. Well, you were was middle child of this big and as family. So you were feeling a little lost and wanting to define who you were. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
That's really half of it. Yeah, I went to go find who I was as a young man and joined the military. So I was 18. Like, I remember I worked at Hershey's Barbecue out through senior year till about September, and then spoke to a recruiter. And then shipped out October 27th, 2015. So started basic training my birthday, November 14th, 2015. So I turned 19, first day of basic training.
So how long were you in, like, the boot camp?
So different Army MOSs have different places to go to boot camp. I went to infantry. I honestly looked at recruiter, was like, you know, it was infantry. I didn't know what that was. I know kind of similar, you know, you shoot guns, that's about it. But they're the front lines of the Army. And
you're like boots on the ground. Boots on the ground. Front line.
Yep, shooting guns.
First defense,
And he was like, oh man, you do MACP, you do combat, wrestling, and you work out all the time. I was like, work out all the time? Yeah, I'll do that. So, will I get buff? He's like, yeah, you will get buff. I was like, okay, bet. I say bet, but I was like, okay, you know, young 18-year-old guy, scrawny, was at 150, I think, and, you know, just signed my life away for about 4 years, and went on the bus. I remember mom, she took me to the recruiting office the day I left, and she was crying. He was like, yeah, he'll do this and this, but backtrack to the question, it's called OSIT. It's in Fort Benning, Georgia, and it's, I think it was, at the time, 16 weeks. So usually, in other MOSs in the Army, you do 9 weeks of your basic training boot camp. Then you do how many weeks of your AIT, which is your advanced individual training for your actual job, your MOS school. OSIT is not like that. It's all the same. It's you graduated boot camp, okay. Still the same drill sergeants. We had SF drill sergeants, Ranger Bat drill sergeants. So that, like, oh, you guys graduated? Okay. You're not leaving yet. So it was about, I think it was 9 weeks of basic training. And then the next was 7 weeks was infantry school, you know, so learning how to clear rooms and throw grenades and shoot rifles and tactics and stuff like that and battle and everything. So.
And while you were in boot camp, there really wasn't much contact allowed between us and you or anybody from the outside.
No.
And you didn't go in with any pals that you knew. You went in all by yourself at 18 years old, had moved straight out of your mom and dad's house into this whole new place. And at what point do you remember it hitting you, like, I'm all alone in this, like, I've really made a life-changing choice and I'll never be the same?
I think leading up to boot camp, you know, I think as for others, but for me, I think I watched a lot of YouTube videos on Netflix at the time. It was Restrepo and Corngal Valley, both military, I think it was 3rd ID Army infantry guys up there in Afghanistan, up in the mountains. It's a documentary about how those guys were up there, and you kind of get your mindset ready to go into that, you know, that field. And I think when we left Raleigh to fly out to Columbus, got to Columbus, and you see all the young men going to one gal with a smoky drill sergeant hat. I knew it was like, okay. And then the bus from Columbus to Fort Benning is like 2 hours, I think, at the most. So, you know, it was 12 o'clock in the morning. Got on the bus, it was 2 a.m. We stop. I wake up, and a guy comes on, girl star comes on, got my bus. And then we got off the bus, and you stand in a formation. And I mean, I was shaking, you know, I was nervous, but I was excited. Like, oh man, been watching these videos for the past 3 years, man. This is my turn now, you know, watching these guys who do it. And I was like, it's my turn now. I get to be being in the military. So, you know, it was also kind of cold. Yeah, it was October, so it was cold. I was shaking, nervous, sweating, but also excited. So,
so was it what you expected, boot camp itself?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Recently, the Army has gotten, I think, personally soft in their basic training ways or drills. When I went in, and probably others before me, it's then called Shark Attack in the Benning. And, you carry two big duffel bags of gear and clothes, and smoke grenades go off, and blanks and M40s go off, and blanks and 50 cal go off, and the smoke, and then you run through smoke, run through walk pit, like go on the ground, and
so just, I was like, having a blast. Super intense.
Yeah, and I saw next to me, I saw a man crying, you know, because we had to hold the bags over our head and squat, and you know, and then lead up to it, I was in decent shape. I think I could have run more, but I was in decent shape leading up to it, so it wasn't kind of hard for me. It was just the mentality of getting used to the military culture and everything. So
what was it in, like, inside the Army itself? What was that like?
Like the actual real Army? Or
Once you got Army? Through boot camp, which I don't want to skip over that without saying that I remember when we did finally get to see you after boot camp, you were so small. It was so hard to see you like that. So, like, you say that they were soft, and there's no words to describe, and there's no way to accurately prepare somebody to go through what the military people go through day in and day out, whether that's infantry or any branch of the military. The things that they have to go through that you had to go through are unimaginable. And just seeing you fresh out of boot camp, like, you hadn't even been in the official military yet, and you've already seen death, you've already seen starvation, you've already been through so much just in boot camp.
Like I said, they changed the ways back in the day in OSIT, we had, you know, It's called hazing, but I think it's just the way the military is, and infantry of combat arms, any MOS. You know, we had force hydration drills. I think my first night I was in cafeteria, and we all had like kind of vest on with numbers. So mine was 238. Never forget it. 238. My bunkmate was Daniel Hailbringer. He was 237, and and it's a blue vest. You have 23 on it, 238, and you march into the cafeteria. You don't talk. No one talks. You have your tray. You pretty much step heel, side lateral. Get your food. Get your drink.
So you're taught how to walk, how to eat, how to hold your body posture. Like, they had everything that you were required to do a specific way.
Yeah.
And just within that boot camp, like, there was so much taught to you about how to hold yourself physically and how to behave physically, but there was not really any conversation for mental health, right?
Yeah.
And so you ended up losing a friend in boot camp.
Yeah. So we had a guy, wasn't in my platoon. It was first platoon. It wasn't during boot camp, but it's just probably, I think it was a couple months after we all graduated and went to our duty stations. I don't know if he was from North Carolina, actually, too. So that's how I knew him. He's from Fayetteville, so we kind of clicked. And he actually committed suicide. Probably, I think he was having trouble with home life, too. But, you know, and you're alone that young, active duty military, you know, your family. So, you know, he...
And how was that, like, handled? Was that addressed at all, or was it just kind of, okay, that happened, move on?
The way the military does is happen, move on, pretty much.
Yeah.
With soft air laws.
So how long were you in the Army?
Rounded, it was 4 years. Contract was 3 years and 16 weeks. So
at what point were you thinking, I have to get out of here?
I honestly didn't want to get out. I actually wanted to be with a group of guys that I had became brothers, family with.
Yeah.
I think I had gotten out, you know, due to, you know, being in quote unquote love and planning to get married to that special someone I thought who was, and looking back on it, I think I could have re-enlisted for another, just a basic 2 years, and probably get out. But I think I got out the right time, due to all the the COVID stuff coming in. And,
just within that short 4 years, you had already been on missions. You had already seen so much. You had already been through so much. And so, you know, where 3 or 4 years passes in civilian time,
yeah,
it's a totally different world.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's not like you were just going to your job, but you're doing something new every day. And at the drop of a hat, your boss can say, okay, we're shipping you off to another country to go do this mission.
Yeah.
And you just hop on the plane and go. Don't ask questions.
Yeah. I think as a kid, 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid, you go into the military 4 years. That's pretty much all you know, because you have no real life work experience outside the civilian world. So it's all you know. And then when you get out of the military, it's a hard transition. It was for me. Just because.
Well, that's something I want to talk about, yeah, but you're skipping ahead of me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
So,
my bad.
So you decided to get out.
Yes.
And you are saying that the reason that you decided to get out was for a person.
Yes.
And it didn't work out.
No.
And so, I just. How do I say this? Okay. Switching to going from active military to vet status. What was that like for you coming back, your interactions with everybody? Like, how had things changed for you?
I think, you know, not much has changed. I think, I was a vet, so people were asking me, why'd you get out? You know, what's your plan to do with your life now you're out? You know, at 22 years old, that's still young to know what you want to do with your life. So, you know, you're a vet, so it's kind of, I didn't walk around with my, you know, vet shirt and hat, camo hat and military boots and metal band you wear when you have, you know, a fallen soldier. You know, I didn't wear all that. I kind of wanted to be a civilian, you know, just lay low and do civilian stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, I think it was extremely challenging for you to come out at 22. Because at that point, a lot of your friends that had stayed around had either gone to college or gotten established in their careers and were kind of figured out more so what they wanted to do with themselves,
yeah,
where you were basically starting all over again.
Yeah.
But yeah, you had these 3 or 4 years of your life kind of taken from you, and you're no longer this boy who was here before. You're now this grown man who... You still are trying to figure out what you want to do,
yeah,
who you want to be. And honestly, there's so much pressure in society to have that figured out at such a young age. And me being almost 30 years old, I still don't have it figured out. Being a mom of two, being married, like having a house, none of that makes me have it figured out just because of that status in life. But there's still so much pressure,
yeah,
to know your career, to know where you want to be, to know what you want to do. And life's expensive.
It is now.
Life is so expensive.
10 years ago, no, really. Ten years ago, you could live off of $40,000 a year if you were single, you know.
Back in the day,
man.
So,
money was.
So there was a lot of pressure on you coming out of the military, and now you're kind of figuring out, navigating your serious relationship, navigating your living situation, navigating your career situation, and how many, what has kind of been your, you know, because my focus I wanted to talk about was mental health. So, like, what impact do you think, getting out of the military had on your mental health?
Oh, it was bad. I fell into depression. It was, you miss your friends. And they're not friends or brother, family, pretty much, because they're right down the door from you. So you're never alone. Make these, you know, I still talk to guys. We talk every day, pretty much. I have a guy in California, we moved to Washington. I have buddies here, buddies in Florida, Virginia, Texas, Oklahoma. So I think one thing with the military is, you know, it's only for a short time, but it's like you make long lasting bonds and friendships. So just getting out of that and not having those guys with me and trying to get back into the civilian life and what I've known before, which I didn't know before because I was only 18, you know, I didn't know how to honestly be a young man in the civilian world, you know, I didn't, and it was hard, it was real hard, I just want to say, and then me not getting the job that I wanted either, right off the bat was hard, it was a no for me, so it was real, probably that 2019 to like 2020, was really hard.
Yeah. So you definitely struggled with some depression. Do you feel like you struggled with any PTSD?
No PTSD.
Oh, that's good.
Like I'm, you know, some guys have it, and you know, that's, I hate it, and it happens though. I think I have a, you know, strong mind. You know, God has blessed me with a strong mind, and watched over me, so I feel like I don't, you know, have anything that triggers me or anything like that.
So what has been your self-care outlet?
Self-care outlet? Well, I like to eat about 4 milkshakes and drink myself to sleep every night. Smoke a pack of cigarettes a day.
So weird.
No, my self-care, I think I've honestly...
What are you doing to take care of your mental health?
Oh, you know, we're trying. Praying, baby, praying. I think... I think the gym. Working out. Talking to people, actually, in the gym. You know, being an extrovert.
Yeah.
Everybody has similar... You know, everybody honestly has similar walks of life, similar problems, so... The gym, mainly. Is you know, my therapy in a way.
So, what was your motivation for getting yourself back on track? Because I think, and again, like, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but like, at what point do you think that, for one, that you started to turn it around? Mm-hmm. And what was your motivation for turning it around? Like, at what point did you realize, like, this life that I'm living is not good for me?
Like the depression or just...
Yeah.
Excuse me. Wow, you know, I think it was just, I knew I could do better. I think, you know, Dad pretty much raised me differently than, you know, I guess all of us at the same time. Dad pretty much, me being his only son, I mean, he had Sebastian, but me, the Hendrix name, I think I was, had to find my groove, had to be like, okay, you know, I'm down, but, you know, I can crawl out of this hole, you know, I could, you know, apply to better jobs, put myself through some training on the technical side jobs and try to make the most out of it. I'm still young, I was like, you know, 23, you
yeah.
know, and just try, you know, all you do is try. I know it's hard, because you have... back of your mind telling you no, but I think it was my mom's like, oh, I'm a man, you know, I'm not a man, but you know, I'm a man, but I think I'd be letting my dad down, I'd let my parents down, my dad down for what they've raised me and taught me, and you know, I was still young, and I wasn't, you know, 40, 45 dealing with depression or, you know, have kids and everything, and I think I just wanted more. I think I could do better. Like, I wanted, end game for me was having a family. And I know, you know, nobody else is going to give me the things that I want, you know, or you know, give me a family myself. You know, have to be a man, work on, be motivated, ask for help, mainly.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. And I think not just from the military perspective, but also just in general in society, it is so frowned upon to ask for help, even from, like, the mom society, yeah. Like, if you reach out for help, it's almost like that's associated with weakness, that you're automatically weak if you do that. And I think that is absolutely ridiculous. There is nobody in life ever that has not needed help at some point. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, like, when anybody that's gone through depression can attest that you physically, at times, and emotionally, in every way, you cannot help yourself. There is a part of you screaming inside you to please do something, to please work on this, to please stop being depressed and get up and do things. And then your body just won't. Mm-hmm. And it's an awful feeling. It's like being trapped inside yourself. You can't even ask for help, even if you wanted to. Yeah. So when you finally see a little bit of light and you ask for help, it's like you're automatically deemed weak.
Yeah. I think society, you know, being a man, you know, it's not masculine to ask for help in anything. And I think as a young man, you need to ask for help because you don't know. You're still learning about the world. You're learning about who you are and learning about how to be, you know, adult, you know, in the society. Excuse me. You know, and that was the biggest thing. I think I came just seeking advice from, you know, Mr. Sam and Devin, and I think Dad as well at the time, and they helped me out a lot, you know, and it's pretty much just to ask.
So asking for help, working out, what advice would you give to someone who is struggling with mental health issues right now? Or adjusting to civilian life? Like, we can do those two separately because they can be separate or they can be together.
So adjusting to civilian life, I'll go and tell them right now is to make a plan. Not just one plan, make four plans. So A, B,
backup,
C, D.
Yeah.
Backup, and your backup,
Yeah.
Save some money. Save that money.
Because they really are like, there you go, good luck.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, save. Have a plan. Have a plan that you want to do. If you don't get to do it, then have a second plan that backs up that first plan. You know, it's just having a plan. That's pretty much what it was. That's probably what they tell you, have a plan. But, you know, being 21, 22 years old, and you're like, I can do it. I'm young. I can figure it out. I'm a guy. But, you know, make a plan. Sit down with your girlfriend, wife, mom and dad, your buddy. Write this stuff down that you want to do that's coming up next year, 6 months from now. Pay off that debt if you're in as you can, and just make it happen, you know.
And
depression, I mean, if you, I only know from a guy experience depression.
Yeah.
I would just take some time and be alone with yourself, not in a room, but like go on walks and go back to your childhood. So, like, what made you happy as a child?
Seek out nostalgia.
What things helped you as a child? What sports did you like? What games did you play? If you're into superheroes, what superhero did you like? What movies did you like? You know, call that, you know, old best friend up, you know, that you haven't seen in a couple of years, and text them or call them, him or her, and see how they're doing. Get back to your family, your roots, because they're the ones that help you pull out of depression. If you can able to work out or go running or walking, do that. Because people in the gym mostly have the same problems you have. They're probably depressed. I say the biggest guy in the gym is probably the nicest guy, because he's been through it. He's going through it. So his emotions and pain are in the weights. So if you come to my gym, I'll talk to you all day. So, you know. I sound the biggest guy in the gym, but I'm saying I would help out and everything. So.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us and being so authentic and genuine.
Yes.
And
I loved it. Great.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. You can pick up your check with my assistant on the way out.
Oh, the check. Was it $2,000?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
Need some money, man. Need some money, man. I'm broke.
And... that's it.
That's it.
The end.
Bye.
Bye.